You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
And welcome. You are listening to watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. It's 12/22/21, and that is the same date backwards and forwards. We don't have that much. Somebody pointed out to me yesterday that yesterday was the last 21st day of the 21st year of the 21st century of the 12th month. Hey, but you know, think about it. I don't think it means anything, but it was also the solstice. Solstice is a time of preparing for the year ahead, getting your stores in order, and getting your plans set for the coming year, which is why we're with our good friend George Gammon. And George, talk about getting your stores together. You mentioned you're across the street from a Whole Foods. I refer to them as holier than thou foods.
Yeah.
And half their shelves are empty. What's going on here? Like, Bezos can't deliver the goods.
Well, I don't know if it's half, but it's probably 10%. I mean, people who understand the business model of grocery stores realize how precious every little inch of shelf space is. So if you see empty shelves, that's a really big deal. And it's not just at Whole Foods, it's the other grocery stores that are in my area. I'm just kind of central Phoenix around the Biltmore. And so this is what you get when you pay people to stay home. This is what you get when you put these draconian lockdowns that really reduce the effectiveness of the supply chains we have. You have massive labor shortages. I would argue probably the biggest labor shortages we've ever seen in the United States. It's tough to get work. If you can't get workers, you're not going to get people to deliver goods. And if you can't deliver goods, the shelves are going to be barren. And this obviously increases the price of the stuff that people pay on a daily basis, which is obviously not a good thing. It disproportionately affects the poor and middle class. But I think the one positive note is that it does make the average Joe and Jane wake up to the unhealthiness of the economy, or how unsound the economy is. When the average Joe goes to the grocery store and sees his bill going up 10% per month, let's say, or just, you know, the basic stuff, like you get a turkey for Thanksgiving and it's $75 or something, and you're like, wait a minute, last year I paid $50. And then they see the prices at the gas station go up, you know, a quarter, 50 cents, a dollar. And then they see a note from their landlord saying that they're going to increase their rent by 15% next year. These are the things that they really pay attention to. And I think subconsciously that even if they have no understanding of economics whatsoever, they know that if prices are going up this fast, there's something wrong. There's something wrong. And I think that awakening is a good thing, although obviously on net balance, it's really bad that they're getting squeezed.
Well, you know, it's interesting as an old person, certainly for most people watching, listening, I'm an old person. I actually remember the last inflationary bout that we had in the 70s. I was younger, granted, in my late teens, early 20s, while it all took place. And it's debilitating. It's really had profound societal effects on the United States. We had the end of the single earner family, where a guy could have a factory job, work on the assembly line, and his wife could be a stay-at-home mom. We had the emergence of the dual income family and the latchkey kid and daycare. And we've seen how well that's worked. And then basically the dissolution of the nuclear family. I'm wondering how we stay together after the next bout, because those are effects that never really have been examined, but I've witnessed them firsthand. I know this has happened. I've seen it with my own eyes. And inflation undermines the underpinnings of the social order and of good behavior, sound behavior. I remember inflation was going up so high that in the 70s, you would just you wouldn't hold on to the money. You'd just be buying stuff, not like it was in Weimar Republic in Germany after World War One by any stretch. But we were at 8-10% inflation, and that was the normal. Now we're way higher, even though the method of measuring it has changed and is understating it. Everyone understands this. And effectively, I've mentioned this on many shows. If you can go buy a house, buy a home, 3% mortgage, and the real rate of inflation is 14%, you are getting a negative 11% return. Effectively, you're paying negative 11% inflation. Interest means you are getting paid to borrow the money.
Yep.
So-called capitalist countries, but any country that purports to be free market cannot survive for very long with extreme negative interest rates, real interest rates like we see now, George.
Yeah, I mean, from an investment standpoint, I think that's why the house or the property has become the liability on the balance sheet, and the 30-year fixed rate mortgage has become the asset. Because I think you're, in real terms, adjusted for inflation, that the probability is high that you'll lose purchasing power on the property because prices are just so astronomically high, higher than they were in 2006, adjusted for inflation. So if we were in a bubble then, most likely we're in a bubble now. But that said, if you're securing that property with 30-year fixed rate debt, I think you'll probably increase your purchasing power even more by paying that debt back with cheaper dollars. Then you lose purchasing power on the asset, potentially going back down to its historic trend, adjusted for inflation. And the prices that we saw 2012, when we bottomed out from the last crash, that was pretty much the historic trend for housing prices adjusted for inflation, going all the way back to 1890. So at some point in time, we'll most likely get back down to that line. Most people, you know, their question is, well, when they think of prices, as you know, Carrie, they just think of prices in nominal terms. So we're going to have a housing crash. For most people, when they think of crash, they think of the price going down by 50%, like we saw from 2006 to 2012. But what they fail to realize is the price can crash up, meaning that you can have the price of your house appreciate by, let's say, 5% per year. But if the rate of inflation is, to your earlier point, 14%, 15%, then you are losing purchasing power, even though the nominal price of your house is going up. So I think that's really what people have to pay attention to. I would suggest, you know, for all those people that are feeling rich, and I think this is a great thought experiment to really show you how devious inflation is. And Milton Friedman, you know, always talked about it being an unseen tax. And it is so true. And it's devious in a way that you can feel like you're actually getting rich. But yet at the end of the day, you look around you and you can't afford as much stuff as you could in 2019. And I think a good example of this would be someone that maybe lives in a state, I don't know, let's just say Texas, something like that. Let's say San Antonio, where your house price last year probably went up by, let's say, 10%. And you're like, great, this is awesome, this is fantastic. But then if you actually kind of scratch your head and look at your grocery bill, that probably went up by 20%. Or, you know, gas has gone up, used car prices have gone up by 50% or whatever it is. Yeah. And not only that, but you have access to less stuff. This is something that most people never, ever really think about. I think it's just crucially important that people see wealth not as dollars, but actually as goods and services. So even if your house, let's say, use that example, goes up by 10%, but you have access to less stuff, meaning you can't get a reservation at a restaurant. You can't get an Uber. You can't get the plumber to come over because he's booked for the next 6 months. Mm-hmm. You can't get a dental appointment. You can't get any of these things that you could have easily gotten in 2019. Although your house went up in value, you have to ask yourself, are you richer or are you poorer? And my answer would be that you're poorer because you have access to less stuff. And that's even if your portfolio appreciated in real terms, which it could have just gone up in nominal terms and gone down in real terms.
Yeah, well, most people don't measure their wealth in terms of purchasing power, George. They measure it in terms of nominal dollars or nominal currency.
Right.
The fact is, you've been getting poorer for 50 years. You just didn't know it. Obviously, you knew it in the 70s, but then wages went up. Cost of everything went up. But the costs of everything have been going up for since the creation of the Federal Reserve.
We can break that line.
Yeah. After World War One, when the Fed was created, 1913, but after it kind of started operating, there was one guy, Woodrow Wilson's vice president. His name eludes me right now. And his thing was, what this country needs is a good 5-cent cigar, because the price of a 5-cent cigar due to the inflation of World War One had gone up to 10 cents.
Mm.
You know, I'd take that 5-cent cigar now gladly, because now you can't get a good cigar for $5, but, you know, 10 bucks is more like it. But point is that this is an example of the reverse wealth effect. So what I find interesting is, like you said, your purchasing power is the ultimate arbiter of your true wealth.
Right.
The less purchasing power you have, the less wealthier you are, the lower your standard of living. And when you have combined less purchasing power with less product available, it's a double whammy, isn't it?
Yeah, I always use the example of living on or being on a deserted island. And let's say you've got a chest full of dollars, you've got $1 billion, or you've got $1 billion of Bitcoin, or $1 billion of gold and silver, for that matter. But the only thing around you is just some salt water, sand, and coconuts. Are you rich or are you poor? The answer is you're poor, because there's no stuff. So that's what I think really paints a picture as to how important goods and services actually are. At the end of the day, it's not the quote unquote money. Money really is, even if it's sound money, it should just be a way to store excess productivity.
And exchange and, you know, other stuff. But yeah, I get it.
So you got excess productivity there, but the actual wealth creation was the excess productivity. It's creating more than you consume. And this is something we've forgotten.
And also savings. One thing I didn't mention about what the deleterious effects of inflation is reduction of the savings rate, because there is a disincentive to save. There's an incentive to spend and take on debt. And as a result, you don't have what we call deferred consumption, which is the way that capitalism was designed to work. So you put off consumption today to save your money and earn a return on it, so you would have more money later at a later date. Deferred consumption, that's the whole underpinning of the system. And that's another reason why inflation is so deadly, whatever it's trading at now. And we can argue that till the cows come home, and you know the cows never do come home. But the fact is, it could easily be 14% or even higher. The producer price index is hovering close to 10. So today's producer price increases are tomorrow's CPI increases.
Yeah. And another thing that people, I don't think, really understand is the higher inflation is in today's society. And I think this was actually a little bit different in the 1970s. But because our world is and our economy is so financialized, meaning the almost the only way for people to get ahead is by speculating. It's by buying the Shiba Inu, or it's by buying GameStop or something like this. So the higher the rate of inflation goes, the further out the risk curve people are pushed, because they can't just put their money in a stock, let's say, because although the stock may go up at 5%, it's the same example that we used with that house earlier, that you have to invest in something that's going to exceed the rate of inflation. So if inflation is 15%, you've got to get a 20% return. You've got to get a 30% return to increase your purchasing power. Well, how on earth do you get a 20% return in today's day and age? Well, you've got to take some real risk. And even if you say, well, you just go into a cryptocurrency or Bitcoin or something like this, okay, but it's still incredibly volatile. And for someone who's, let's say, you know, 70 years old or something like that, they might not be able to withstand a 50% downturn in their portfolio. Because again, our world has been so financialized, they've had to invest their whole life. So their portfolio is their net worth. We're going back to the late 1800s, as an example, where we actually had good, healthy deflation as a result of productivity. You could have put your money in a savings account and got a positive real return of 7%. So if we lived in a world where you could get a positive real return of 7% in a savings account, for heaven's sake, so almost zero risk, our level of productivity would be far higher today, and we would be far richer as a society.
Yeah, that's what so many of you out there don't understand. Is that there's a crowding out effect. All the government, all the money it takes, individuals could have taken that money, invested it, gotten far greater returns. And if we had not had this confiscatory taxation system going back 80 years now, we would be probably 5 to 10 times wealthier as a nation. Putting aside the fact that the country's insolvent, we wouldn't be insolvent now. The country would be a totally different world, but we're kind of digressing there.
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
American Eagle Gold is focused on exploring for a world-class gold deposit on its flagship property, Golden Gate, located in the Cortez Trend, next door to Barrick Gold and Newmont Mining's Gold Rush and Cortez Mine. They have produced over 27 million ounces of gold. The company plans to drill and advance its relatively unexplored property and continue to focus on acquiring and advancing gold projects in the area. Vice President of Exploration Mark Bradley was at the helm of the team that discovered and defined Gold Rush and has spent the better part of 30 years working on the Cortez Trend. American Eagle trades under the symbol AEG on the TSX Venture. For more information and to sign up for notifications, go to AmericanEagleGold.ca.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
Yeah, and another problem the government is going to have coming up, just based on that financialization that we were talking about earlier, is that now they're pretty reliant upon capital or asset appreciation for their tax revenue. If you notice, regardless of what the highest marginal rate is, the tax receipts as a percentage of GDP stays pretty consistent. And if you look back to like 1970, you don't really see an up or down in the receipts as a percentage of GDP based on highest marginal rate, but it's really what is the stock market doing. So as an example, in the late 90s, we had a stock market boom, and sure enough, you saw receipts just go straight through the roof. You say, well, that's because Clinton raised the highest marginal rate. No, it's not, because if you go back and look at the marginal rate, usually it doesn't have anything to do with the level of receipts that are coming in as a percentage of GDP. And so then you look at when the stock market crashes, and then that's when receipts really go down. So, the current administration can sit there and talk about tax hikes and doing all these things to pay for Build Back Better or whatever they want to do.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is you can increase tax rates all you want. It doesn't mean that people are going to pay them. The real goose that laid the golden egg for the federal government as far as taxes is going to be the stock market, which incentivizes them to continue to blow air into the bubble. Which creates more inflation, because that means more money printing. And then that's just, again, robbing from the poor to give to the rich. It's like an inverse Robin Hood effect.
Okay. And let's not forget that the more they financialize the economy, the more they get to find the major players in the financialized economy, the big banks, who pay tens of billions of dollars in fines every year. And to them, it's just like a parking ticket. I was going to say speeding ticket, but they don't get any points. It's a parking ticket. And they get to deduct the fines from their taxable load. And so the taxpayer pays a good chunk of it as well. So there's no winning. But raising taxes, we know that the wealthy can time, like Elon Musk, the ultimate so-called freeloader, he can just time his stock sales when he wants money. He doesn't need to earn income like the average Joe. And as a result, so many years, most years, he pays no taxes. This year, he happens to be paying $11 billion, which is a pretty sizable sum. but he's still paying it at the capital gains rate. And he's, because he earned a lot of this income in California, he's got to pay California taxes, but now he's a resident of Texas. So that's not going to go on for much longer. He was on an interview and he was mentioning he has no offshore accounts. He has no trusts. He has no tax minimization strategy whatsoever because he just doesn't think about it. And he said that he could actually go to H&R Block and have his taxes done. They would just have to add a few zeros. Maybe their computer could handle it. I don't know that their computer could handle $1 billion transactions. So they would have to handwrite some zeros in on the return, right?
Yeah, something like that. But, you know, whether you're a fan of Elon Musk or not, I mean, that makes sense to me as a former, or maybe I'm a current entrepreneur, I don't know, but I retired in 2012. And prior to retiring, you know, as an entrepreneur, obviously not at Elon Musk's level, but still doing pretty much the same stuff on a daily basis. Because whether you're running a mid-sized business with 100 employees or you're running Tesla, you're still doing the same types of things. You're having to solve problems, you're having to manage people, and you're having to stay motivated, stay clear-headed, you know, raise capital. You're having to do all these things. You're having to manage cash flow, deal with accountants, deal with lawyers. It's the same stuff, just at a much higher level. Yeah. When he says that, you know, I just don't even think about it, I get it. I was in the same boat when I was an entrepreneur. I mean, I think about that stuff a lot more now as an investor. But back then, it was just pedal to the metal and just, you know, kind of just extreme focus and tunnel vision on the mission. Yeah. And I just dealt with taxes, you know, when the dust settled, just have the accountant deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, a little tax planning can go a long way. We use trusts now. We have a lot of ways of mitigating taxes that the rich people have been using for over 100 years because of technology, because of cost-effective economies of scale. The average Joe can get in on it now. If you're interested in trust, just shoot me an email. I'll share my knowledge with you. But having trusts, there's a lot of benefits to trust. Asset protection. You know, once you start making money, George, you become, you go to the top of the line on everybody's hit list on how they're going to extract money from you through the legal system. And you're a target, basically. So trust can help you with that. And also trust help figure out where your stuff goes when you die without the intervention of the legal system, which is always a good thing. That itself saves a lot of money.
Yeah, the one thing trusts don't save you from is paying the tax of inflation. And that, like we said earlier, is disproportionately burdened on the shoulders of the poor and middle class because such a significant portion of their paycheck goes to the things that are going up in price, i.e. the shelter, food, and energy. So I think that's what's most important. You know, Elon Musk is going to be able to handle 10 or 15% inflation, no problem. You know, I could probably handle that as well. But unfortunately, just the average Joe and Jane cannot. And, you know, they may think it's, you know, one thing that we didn't talk about, Kerry, but plays into this conversation is a lot of the media now is arguing why we should extend the child tax credit. Mm-hmm. And I get it. Listen, I get it. You know, their argument, ironically, is that prices have gone up so much in 2020 and 2021 that we need to continue to give people more money. But yet they never connect the dots there. You know, like, wait a minute. Why are prices going up?
Oh, why, morons? Why?
Yeah, well, in their minds, it's hard for us to understand, but in their mind, they think prices go up because
greed.
Business owners just get greedy. Yeah, they're just like, I need more money. I need more money. I'm going to raise my prices and I'm just going to collude with all the other business owners on my street, and we're all going to raise our prices just to screw the little guy. They actually have that cartoonish level of economic understanding, you know, and it's like a child that you're dealing with. So if you know, had that view, then sure, it makes sense. Give people more money because tax the business owners because they're gouging everyone, and then give people money. That's the way you grow an economy, Gary. Yeah, FYI.
Exactly. That's it. Yeah. Wealth is created by the government printing press, not by innovation, not by higher productivity.
No.
Not by providence and thrift. Wealth is strictly, you didn't build that. The government did it for you. Therefore, give us all your money. And it's ridiculous. And this is why we started out talking about this pre-call, is why wage and price controls are inevitable. We've got an article coming out shortly, 8 reasons why wage and price controls are inevitable. And top of the list is greedy capitalists. The capitalists are greedy and they need to be stopped. And forget about the fact that purchasing power is declining at an alarming rate of the currency. It's all greedy capitalists' fault.
Yeah. I mean, I think if we take the Fed at their word that they're going to taper down to zero and then raise rates 3 times in 2022, at some point, there's a high probability that the stock market does not like that. And if you assume, which I do, and I've done a lot of research on this, that the economy really is dependent upon asset prices, it's dependent upon the stock market. So if the stock market goes down, so does the economy. So the Fed could, and assuming that CPI, as measured by the government, is still hovering, let's say 7%, 7.2, maybe it's going up to 7.5, then the Fed is in a very difficult position, because if the stock market goes down by, let's say, 20%, what do you do? Do you lower rates back down to zero? Do you say, okay, we're going back to 100 billion in QE per month? Do we take that up to 200 billion? What does the government do? Do they come in and say, okay, well, we've got to do another CARES Act 2.0, where instead of 5 trillion, now it's 10 trillion or whatever it needs to be to make sure that the economy and the stock market is propped up again? But then you're doing that in the face of, let's just say, 7% CPI. And then you kind of look at that through the lens of a politician, and their number one objective is just getting reelected. So they know that the fastest way that they can not get reelected is to have consumer price inflation. That is not good for the politician that is in office. When people get pissed off that they're paying higher prices, they're not going to vote for you. So what do? Right? Because if they raise interest rates to get reelected to combat the inflation, well, then they're going to crush the stock market. They're going to crush the economy. Then they're not going to get reelected. If they don't raise interest rates, if they do more QE, then that's going to exacerbate inflation, and then they don't get reelected. So I think that they'll revert back to the price controls, to your point, that we saw in the 1970s, because that's the path of least resistance. The politicians don't care about economics. They don't care about society. They don't care about the average Joe and Jane. I think the majority of politicians out there on both sides, if you gave them a choice as to, you know, on this side, you can crush the economy and get reelected, and on this side, you can do the right thing that's better for the average Joe and Jane, but you don't get reelected, they're going to take option number one every single time.
Oh, yeah.
Every single
time. Easy way out.
Yeah. So if their advisors come to them and say, hey, your only chance of getting reelected is to institute price controls, and the way we'll spin it is that you're taking bold action for the consumer, you're taking bold action for society, and you're taking aggressive action against these greedy capitalists that are raising prices. And you can see them spin it. I mean, you can see Joe Biden come out and actually selling it that way. Oh, yeah. And that's why I think there's a strong probability that into 2022, 2023, if we continue to see the CPI, the headline number, go up, then this is what we're also going to see play out with politics.
Just like they can control interest rates, they can control commodity prices through manipulation of the markets. I'm not saying they're doing it, but it sure looks suspicious. A lot of times you see these things like copper take off, go exponential, hit a new high, and then crash. And then they come down. And so commodity price manipulation is another form of wage and price controls. It's very underhanded. It's very stealthy. Eventually, it leads to massive shortages because the producers of these commodities can't get a decent return, a reasonable return on their capital, and they pull back. When you manipulate the prices, anything can happen. Well,
we if you want to put the tinfoil hat on real quick, another thing to artificially reduce the price of commodities, therefore lower inflation, is just put everyone in a cage.
Yeah.
Lockdown in Austria, lockdown in Germany, lockdown in the United States, lockdown here, lockdown in New York, lockdown in California. That'll reduce commodity prices.
Yeah, well, it'll reduce.
So I'm not saying they're doing prices, that.
But it'll increase the savings rate too. A lot of beneficial things happen there, and then they can pay down their debt, which they don't really want done, because we have to have ever expanding debt at every level of society for the game to continue. How long it will continue is anybody's guess. George, where is the best place to find you these days? How do we connect with you on the internet?
On my YouTube channel. I've got two of them, actually. One is George Gammon, just my name, and the other one is called Rebel Capitalist.
All right, Rebel Capitalist, and there's a link in the show notes to those channels. George, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for coming by. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on, Kerry.
Thanks for listening to Kerry Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.